Welcome to NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with your host, Dee Klein. On today's episode of NFP, the creative producer Keith Botha joins me to talk about his ongoing efforts to harness artists' creativity in the Web3 space. We discuss his work with Party Animals and the new immersive brand agency Blockchini, and we share thoughts on topics such as the recent open edition craze on Manifold and the new ability to create NFTs directly on the Bitcoin blockchain. Hey, this is NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with me, Dee Klein. Today's episode is brought to you by the Koi Network. Koi makes minting NFTs super easy and inexpensive. Just drag and drop your file using their NFT wallet, Finny, and Koi takes care of the rest. Minting costs as little as 1 cent, so you can create as many NFTs as you want. And when they're viewed by other people, you even earn Koi tokens that you can use to fund your next series. Check it out at koii.network. All right. Yeah. Keith Botha, welcome to NFP. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, it's awesome to see you again. It's been a while. I'm pretty sure we talked before the show. I'm pretty sure where we first met was in Miami. I remember walking into, there was some kind of party, and I think Pitbull had just finished playing, and I think I walked in there with Ali Sabat and Emily Lazar and a good friend of mine, Remo. And we met you and talked briefly about, you know, just what was going on in the scene. And it was an exciting time. You know, it was, would that have been late 2021?
Yes, it was definitely right? 2021. Yes.
Right. And man, a lot has happened since then.
I mean, it's like I said earlier, it all kind of melted into one time and space for me. It's like, I know it all happened and it's kind of still happening. And I think that's the thing. It's just, it was a certain time and space then, and there was a certain distance we've all come to that point, and it was very fresh. And I think, you know, in hindsight, it's such a different thing than happened at the end of 2022 in Miami, which in itself is a very deep rabbit hole and story that can be unpacked, right? But there was like the first time I got to Art Basel with that week and that night meeting you, it was like, oh my God, the whole world's changing. There's 60,000 more people in Miami for Art Basel, all crypto native, Web3 centric. Here we are taking over the world. And a year later, I think it was 4% of that. But the level and quality of people that were there was like astronomical. So yeah, but I digress with that.
Yeah, it's been amazing the span of time, you know, and the people I've seen you working with in that time, you know, they're some of my favorite people in the space. You know, we're talking about people like Gabe Weiss and Sabat and Emily Lazar and Warhodl and just phenomenal artists that you have been facilitating a lot of events for them. Z Hovak's another one that comes to mind. And tell me about that. Like, what has your role been working with them over this past couple of years? Right.
I think, I mean, it all started and it still is, like, I got to know them from very early days in the space. Will Gaines had an event in LA, which was a lot of our first physical event. And then I met a lot of people there, but Gabe and I became very close and we started going to all these live events. And then eventually we set up a show for him at Bright Moments in Venice. We got to meet Justin then. A lot of that was... And it was this big first gallery show with the digital and the physical pieces in one space. But it was also ended up in this Gabapalooza big party and event. I think up until that point, it was the biggest event that was done in the space. And we were blown away by it. And that night, we started or birthed a project called Party Animals, which originally was just going to be a PFP, but it turned out to be a very curated community and an organization of early adopters and people in the space, very art-centric, the builders, the media creators, the content creators, just people like really in it for the art and for the experience, for creating creators' economy and stuff. So people do what they do and people went on, but I stuck to Party Animals quite heavily in terms of curating these experiences and immersive events under this label, and did a lot of networking, right? So the level of quality people attending our events mixed with the high level artists that we bring to the events and create these installations and like mixed medium displays and a new social interactive, right? Like a very artistic safe space. And people really started getting into it. They loved it. So the more I saw it, the more I stuck to it. And the answer was always art and just raising the frequency of the room. And then people leave moved and they collaborated on a level that they don't even realize in that moment. So it evolved. I started working with artists quite heavily just to make sure there's content creation, right? I come from 20 years of entertainment and TV broadcast where I understand content and the way it should be used to, if you didn't film it, it didn't happen, right? So it's like a lot of that became a relative thing. I started releasing a lot of content with them and consulting on projects and also just like having fun and collaborating, right? Like brainstorming stuff. That's what I've always done. I love playing games and like creating tasks and these kind of things. I've done it on TV shows my entire life, right? So it became very obvious that there's a big need for artists to put themselves out there, but creating a safe space around them. So that was a big focus and for always will be for me. But doing very unique experiences where it's never the same thing and you can go to all of them and you will never get bored with it kind of thing, right? But it was also a lot of proof of concept, I feel, in 2021 and 2022 heavily. But at the end of the year, I got to do a massive installation with War Huddle at Paris Hilton's event in Santa Monica, which was this cool 1111 media slimming event, which was very special. And they loved it. You know, we took a bunch of artists there. War Huddle had a big installation. Myself, him, and Manny Lynx worked on it for days and just like had so much fun with it. And it was very well received. So since then, I've just been on a flow state, in all honesty. But it got to a point very organically where my thing is being surrounded with artists and creators and being able to channel them and help them to explore, have fun and do things together, like really try and utilize each other's presence for each other. Because it's not just about using people's reputations. It's not about just, oh, that artist with that artist. They all complement each other in a very abstract way. You know, the one's the pianist and the other one's the drummer and the one's the violinist, but they don't know it. They're just beautiful creatures creating art. But put them in one room, the people that participate get taken on an extreme journey. And it's a very interesting flow state in itself. So big focus on that. But it grew into a thing where I can do more with more infrastructure. I can go bigger. I can go more inclusive, or, you know, immersive. I can go more driven with certain production level. You know, the more I raise the production level, the more the experience gets elevated. So for me to create that kind of installations and experiences, I need to have a bit more of an agency and production infrastructure built around me. And that's why myself and War Huddle, for him as a start being very art focused and artist led, we came up with Blockchemy. Right, it's a brand that he designed, and I explained the business model I need and the creative structure I need to build out one him as a artist for our agency, but every other artist that we work with and co-create with essentially. So we got involved with him. I started talking to him. Yumi, who's also a co-founder, who does a lot of the marketing, social media for all of these big artists. And also Greg Bean, who's the founder of multiple brands and projects in the space so far, also been very supportive of the arts and all the people I've been bringing to the party, essentially. So building these networks up. We also had Shay Smith, who's coming on to be an operational kind of director person, operations vibes manager. But yeah, I've been building hard in the background to just like really build a company where I can have more structure to build all these different brands out that we basically have within our ecosystem. And then also just be very art focused and creating more infrastructure for artists to one, build out their brands and take it to markets where it's not in Tiller and we can go take it outward, and then supplying them with tools, you know, to do and do cool things. But a very good mix of, you know, it's very art centric. So it's everything we've aligned and kind of managed to build up over the last 2 years is coming to one pivoting point where everyone's like, oh shit, we have all these things. Now we need to use it and start executing on it. So yeah, that's me where I'm at the moment.
It feels to me like you are the orchestrator, like you're the one that's kind of organizing things for these artists. Artist personalities are all over the place, right? Like artists aren't necessarily the best organizers. They're not necessarily the best to come up with, you know, an agenda or, but they might have a vision, but they need that person that's like, okay, no, the logistics of it. Would that be your forte then, is the logistics side of things?
Yeah, I think it helps. I mean, yeah, we all have our things, right? And they all have their things individually. It's so like I go gray about 50 times a day, 50 shades of gray, but it's because of, it's a passion. Like it's my life, right? Like this is my best life, being surrounded by this and all the creatives I've always been around with is such a blessing. But it's logistically important to know what to expect and how to get into it. You know, it's like the less you have, the more creative you are with execution, and it really tests you, but it does have a level of stress that comes with it. But we've managed to kind of go with the flow. I also haven't ever put too much expectation in people or worry about it too much, because they are who and what they are. They can't fail at that. These are people that, if nothing else, have understood and have gone through some self-actualization of who and what they are. And that in itself is a feat. And I think that's why they just do what they do so well. And especially when you put them in the same space, they feed off each other. They just have a good time and they get to share that with collectors and new people. Like, we're not by any means a exclusive community in terms of trying to hold people out. It's more, we built a community of creatives and talented beings that have the ability to bring more people to the conversation and into the room, I feel. So yeah, I have been called the conductor by various people that's been obviously observing from the sideline or semi in, I don't know. But I do, I just love it. I've always done it, right? Like I've always had to logistically and creatively create things that come from people's minds, you know. In the TV business for years, it's stuff like Survivor and MasterChef and Big Brother. I need to set the scene and get all the tools to have things there when they want to shoot and all the characters are lined up. So it's like building the same structure, you know.
See, then that's what's really interesting to me about it, is that you're not only doing the logistics, but of course it takes a creative mind to facilitate what you're doing too. So you too are highly creative. You're that rare creature that's highly creative yet also highly organized. That's not a common thing.
I mean, that I appreciate that. I don't think the highly organized, other than only 100%, like it's very, like I do allow myself to go with the flow, because it kind of works, right? Like, and that's why essentially Warhoddle and I started the agency together. It's because when we co-create, we're on the same speed. We just flow, and it really, I think that's the best way to create. And if you can dial that in, it kind of just goes right. It can't go wrong, because you're not putting too much weight on it except staying super present and being there for it. But yeah, you catch balls, but I'm a serial creative. Honestly, it's like I can't switch it off even if I tried. So just every day, there could be a million things we want to do, but I'm very practical about what we can and should be doing also, and not like overcommitting to things. But yeah, I just love what I do. And it is, it's like playing real life puzzles with the most colorful puzzle pieces. And I think that's pretty exciting for me.
Yeah. You mentioned you're working with Warhol, and when did you discover this kind of sense of synergy between the two of you, like that you just seem to work together so well?
I mean, I think things like that also only kind of develop over time. Interestingly enough, all the artists I work with at the moment, you know, in any shape or form or context, is I sent them all messages on Instagram the first week, which was like beginning of 2021 when I found them. Yeah.
That sounds right.
Yeah. And I just sent them all. And I was like, I just know at some point I'm going to have to come and see you in your workshop and document you. And we'll have to make an episode or a little like overview of your artistry and your personality. Cause I just saw so many of them. They like, when I see a superstar, I know it's a superstar. That's what I've always been doing. Like, I need to identify the best of the best in certain skill sets or specialists or creative, you know, skills and gifts. It's like, I love it. So, but getting to work with people, and it just takes a bit of time to get to know the personalities, and everyone's got their quirks. We all do. And people need different things. But yeah, I think it's just the pace thing. I think we flow on a very steady pace. I think we just like have a very interesting ability to keep ourselves very like level-headed and just kind of being playful with all the stuff we come up with. You know, he's a genius, right? Like they all are. Like I think they're all so clever, and because it's not just being able to create art, it's like art that moves you. It's clever, it's smart, it's beautiful, it's interactive, it gives back, that kind of thing. There needs to be an all-rounded package for people to operate on a certain level, I feel, certain level. And I think they all do. So he does that for me. He's just like such a rounded package. He's just too much. The first thing, and this is why we started the agency. You know, when I first got to see him, he was the first artist I think I ever came across on Clubhouse with Blau and Beeple and those people. And with Richard even from Manifold. And I was like, this dude's clever. He's got class. But I didn't believe it was one person. I thought it was an agency or a collective because it was really well done. I thought the execution was so well done that I wouldn't put it past anyone if that was like a couple of people who was doing that. And then I found out, but it wasn't. It's always just been him. And I mean, I was like, you don't have a team? He's like, no, I'm just being my best self. I'm like, okay, great. Well, one, you need a team, but you don't. But I want to work with someone that comes across like they are six people.
It seems like that's a common thing in the NFT space for a lot of people to kind of just be their own, kind of steering their own ship, though. Wouldn't you say so?
I mean, I think everyone came into it like that. It's only been a couple of years. I feel 100%. I feel there's a lack. I think there's so much opportunity, right, for people to grow bigger than what they are. But when you are one person, it is very hard and it's very demanding. You have to. There's various social media channels. If you don't give yourself as an artist, you know, the tools to regulate and distribute content to all these things autonomously, or like from a certain tool that can send it to five different ones, or, you know, it's like Discord management. And then it's also uploading and minting the art. It's like, it's a full-time job, right? And I think that's why mental health's been such a big thing in this space, because it's overwhelming. I don't think it's very sustainable for artists to be able to do all those things. I don't think artists need to, personally. I think they need more support and more help. Just dealing with negativity also, like the space is toxic, right? So being you having to sit online to field questions or something, that's not really your forte, but expected to do so, it's a bit unfair. And yet, how else do you stay relevant in this space? If you're not showing up, you're not showing up. So I think it's been hard for a lot of artists to keep the balance in that sense. So yeah, it's good that people are like multifunctional or multi-skilled, but I think it's more important to stay true to what they really want and identify if they need more and kind of putting in support systems, I think. And I think they'll realize that that takes them much further. When you can just focus on what you're really good at, and that's your art and your painting and digital creation, then please only do that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So how does an artist reach that point? Like, how does an artist get to a point where, say, for example, they're working with something like Blockchemy? What do you suggest?
I think consistency, in all honesty, it's the only thing that I can use as a proof of that. If you did that, if you kept on showing up for yourself as an artist or a creator, right, at your pace, whatever that is, I think it will break at some point. The hack will happen, because it's showing people consistency. I feel people value someone that keeps showing up for themselves more than just being hyped up or shilling, all these like super horrible terms. It's recognizing people for who and what they are and their willingness to be their best selves. Even if it does take 20 years to hit, it doesn't matter. They'll be doing it regardless, because that's what they do and that makes them happy. But yeah, I think consistency, and then also, you know, aside from that, strategy. Like, you need to figure out what you want to achieve. You need to be very clear and very honest with yourself as a creative to what you want from your artistry. Because if you don't convey that to yourself, let alone anything else, you're not going to get it, right? You can be working every day, but if it's not coming with good intention, with understanding of it's pushing you closer to where you want to be, then it's gonna be hard. I think, you know, I think truthful creating, understanding your own goals, setting those goals, even if you don't get to them, you set them, and I think that's the win. Even if you just put yourself up to be, you know, you're accountable for your own actions, then, you know, I didn't do it, or yes, I did. I did it 7 months before I thought I would. So I got to a point where I could add more points or next steps. But starting slow, or not slow, but steady, steady is the word, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, a big part of what I see with you is the ability to spot talent too, and to see who is special. You mentioned that before. Drop some names of people you're seeing lately that are kind of catching your eye?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, right? This is the problem also. There's people Pick a few. So, I mean, definitely coming up heavily and will continue doing so. Manny Lynx is going to do some insane things in the up and coming years. Z Hoback, Camille Chang, definitely. Savid's a goat, but that guy's also rocking. Gabe Weiss, Mira from Miami. This is an artist that's also going to hit the... She's already been doing really big stuff, and she's a big muralist in great fashion, but I think she's coming into the Web3 space soon, so that's something to look forward to. Alex Alpert, Gunnar Magnus is coming up with something cool. Definitely Emily Lazar. She's currently doing a very cool graphic novel drop on Manifold. And then in a few weeks, she's also doing a drop on Async. She's just been pushing. One of the most hardest working people I've ever met.
Emily. Oh, cool. Tell me about her Async drop. I'd be interested in finding out about that.
Okay, so it's called Unholy. And that's dropping on the 15th of November, oh, February, sorry. 15th of February, 2023 at 9 a.m. September morning, becomes the first metal band to do programmable music on async blueprints. Yes.
That's cool.
That is very cool. She's doing a very cool one at the moment now with Darkman and the Reapers, where if you collect the Darkman, you can use that. You can use him to burn and then resurrect the Reapers. And they all come with different traits and different storylines. And then the more you collect, the more they open up for you to redeem down the line also. And if you collect the whole set of the Reapers and the Darkman, you get airdrop the Fate, which is a very special token also. She's very like busy and clever with those kind of things.
Well, that's on Manifold, right? That, what do you think of you know, the current kind of exciting things going on in the space, like the whole open edition craze and Manifold kind of becoming the new home for so many of these things? What do you think?
I love it. I do love it. I think it's interesting. I have a very specific way of looking towards all of this because I work with so many different artists, but having the tools, it just allows for super creativity to take place. You can reward your community. You can do very low entry points for people to join your community and collect your art that's never been able to. Today was a very big day for me also, and I'm sure a bunch of other people, because Sabed's doing a drop on Manifold, and that allows you to go claim 12 free NFTs, one a month in the next year. That hasn't been done. So he nailed that. I love that concept of it. Emily's doing hers. We had one with Manny Links where he did the seeds drop, and that was like in the shape of the check marks also, as inspired by that. But the more seeds you collect, the more trees you can grow later on. So obviously a gameplay component and cool mechanic there. And then Warhoddle with his lids, he did the same thing. He did a spin-off with the check marks and the what's it? Who's the guy who did that?
Jack Butcher.
He did the spin-off of Jack Butcher because, I mean, that's just what he does from a brand play and a branding perspective, and also his social commentary. He's always been very clever with that kind of concept art. So he nailed that and he did really well. I think, you know, we sold 2,200 lids, and the lids will be redeemable for physical pieces. You can redeem them for a weekend. I think there's one for 888 or 444 lids, which someone did buy a couple of hundred at least. But you can redeem it for a weekend where you go spend it with them. He takes you out on the boat and you create art, and you most likely leave with, I'd say, multiple thousands of dollars worth of art, essentially, right? But more so the experience. So yeah, I think people are just having a lot of fun with it. I think it's important to use it wisely. There is a very big component of using it to reward previous collectors, right? Like if you're going to have an entry point for other people, best you kind of look after your existing collectors. And I think that's just a moral thing as opposed to anything else. You know, people love a thank you for supporting me gift. We're going to give other people the chance to come in with less barriers. I feel it's important. But yeah, I think it's to be explored. I think it's important for artists to, one, just be educated on the tools. Like we've been doing it quite heavily with Blockshimi, where a lot of the artists we work with, we have people now just on standby to talk them through it if they want to mint stuff themselves and make sure they're safe. That's been a very big problem. Mm-hmm. You know, back end of all these things. It's still wallets and it's still on-chain funding and money that gets moved around. And it's like, you want to keep people safe. So I'm glad it's there. But yeah, I'd like to know your thoughts. What do you think about it?
No, it's pretty wild. I like you said about being careful about it. Personally, I'd like to do something with it, probably tied to my podcast and probably, like you mentioned, tied to people who have been, you know, supportive over the last couple of years in one way or another, and kind of maintain that, but build on that. And so, yeah, I feel like I got to think carefully about it before I do go ahead and do something. I don't want to just have an open edition out there just for the sake of having an open edition. You know what I mean? So it does take a lot of thought, I think, you know, and a lot of planning to get something that, you know, it's not just casually, you know, just minting something and going, here, everybody, we'll see what we do with this. Do you know what I mean? I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing either, to go, hey, you know, this may change in the future what you get from this, you know, like maybe in the future you could decide token holders get a special thing from it, right? Like there's nothing holding you back from changing that in the future. But I think it's important to have that vision in the first place of where you want to go, how you want to use it.
Right. Yeah, I think you're 100% right. You need to be thoughtful about it. Once again, I think people, you know, yeah, there's been a lot of the people going around, oh, people are doing cash grabs. It's really not. If you're selling art, it's not that. It's like, it's literally the opposite. Your craft is being monetized for you to keep creating. And I think that's a thing that people also need to understand. You know, it's like artists need to be able to create. It takes money to create art, and it's expensive, mm-hmm. especially when you want to elevate the art, you know, it inevitably then raises the value of the existing art because it keeps pushing the boundaries and the standards of how it's being created and developed. But yeah, it's good tools. People should just use it to make fun and cool stuff.
Yeah. Great. I mean, there is a part of me too that I'm always a little bit, I mean, it's kind of funny because I am a relatively early adopter to a lot of this stuff, but at the same time, I'm a little hesitant to do it the wrong way. You know what I mean? And to just go out there and put something out and then go, ooh, I shouldn't have done this, or, you know, so there's always that element of trepidation there too, right? To these things.
Yeah. You need to be very careful. I think people just, the more you plan and just know where you're going with it, the more you prevent any sort of backlash. And I think no one wants to deal with that. You want to just do right by yourself and everyone else and not deal with like a community that's angry or roared up. It's like, if you choose this life, you're going to have to keep just creating. And if that's what they're there for, you'll be fine.
Right. Yeah. Well, and of course, you also don't want to be in a situation where you've promised something that you can't actually execute. That happens too in this space, right?
I mean, it's I can be honest, I feel it's happened with me in one or two projects where I was associated with other people and when things didn't happen. But it's like, you find ways to come back from that and make it better. And I think if you stay aligned with that vision, then yeah, you can save things. But no, the lack of realness and transparency has been very, very difficult. A bunch of us have felt it on multiple levels, like people don't even know. Like complete con people or fake people and like very harmful personalities that do navigate in the space on all kinds of levels. You know, it's out there. And I think that's what's led to the inclusive but non-exclusive but kind of just very specific curation of the people around me. It's like
there's a protective element to it.
Has to be, for all of our sakes, especially artists that just need to be concentrating on work and creativity and not deal with negativity or toxic behavior. It's just not conducive to anyone's good time on this experience.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about this whole phenomenon of the Bitcoin ordinals, Bitcoin NFTs, which as of this point for listeners, you've got to be pretty technically minded to do this at this stage, because it's not like you can just go to a website and mint it. You know, like it's a process, and even selling them, it's all based on trust. Like it's just, you're transferring it to them and they're sending you the money. And so it's rife with the potential to really lose your shirt if you're not careful. And it's not meant for the faint of heart is what I, you know, my impression so far, but it looks interesting. What I find the most interesting about it is the, how do you say it? The Bitcoin maxi reaction to it. What do you think of all of this?
It's scary. I for one, I mean, I've known of Bitcoin, I feel, for a very long time. I've had some over the years, but not to the volume where a lot of these big maxis and people have whatsoever. And it's like, It's pretty scary. I do find it weird because historically Bitcoin is Bitcoin. Like from a historic value, I think the supply is at like what, 21,000 or 21 million billion, whatever it is, capped out. It's like they will never be more. And now they're transferring it in things, and they are. They're backing other assets with it for transfer and exchange. And it's not that relevant. It's not really a use case, in my humble, not so humble opinion. I do see it becoming a thing if it's linked to certain art or projects. I do think there is a value exchange that will keep it growing in value, and it's a good, you know, place to put it in that sense. And I think there's a lot of industry that can come from it in the creative sense like that. But I don't know. I'm skeptical. I don't know. I also, it's like, I wouldn't change my Bitcoin. I wouldn't. Mm. I would buy really good art with my Bitcoin, 100%. I would buy it with any currency, right? Like really good art to me. Art, in my opinion, and then it's a thing that's shown historically just internationally in the cross currency, art retains value better than any currency thus far, because it encapsulates story, a time and space and history, which is, that is truly non-fungible, right? Mm. What it represents, it doesn't matter if it's on the blockchain or not. It represents a cultural movement most of the time. And I think real art does signify and show these kind of nuances, right? So that's what gets at the, and if you know the artist is going to keep creating, like a Gabe Weiss or a Sabin Moro, like going to just keep doing what they do. It's like these people are professional career creators. So I'd give any money for that or any currency, but for these spectacle or speculation of some of these transactions, I don't know.
It's interesting to me. I mean, one of the things they people seem to be upset about is that it's boosted the transaction costs, of course, because all of a sudden there's all this utility on Bitcoin. What? Sorry if that sounded bad, but you know, it's kind of ironic, right? That people are like, hey, you're using Bitcoin, you're making transaction fees go up, right?
Cool. I mean, I've been scooping up a bunch of interesting collections the last couple of days, and it's like super fun collections. So you're paying a couple of dollars for a digital asset or collectible, and now all of a sudden the gas is up to like $30 again. You're like, no. They're already on the slow minting. Yeah, come on. But it is interesting. I think it will happen in each ecosystem when there's a currency that's had no real value other than historic, right? And a use case for transactional use. So they'll always, like, people love transacting. People love, if they hold so much of it, they love being able to exchange it for something else. It's just the thing. And I think in reality, I think some of the wallets that hold some of these megalodon size bags and Bitcoin holding, they can do whatever they want, and they will keep doing it, because if they essentially add value to it, it could go up or down, but they don't care at that point. I think some people need something to do with their money.
Exactly. Yeah, no, and on top of that, you have how many new entrants into this whole space have entered it to buy an NFT? That's the reason that they got into it was, I kind of like this NFT thing. And they'd never touched crypto prior to that, you know? So I think it's really interesting now that that's coming to Bitcoin. It could be, you know, someone out there gets a service set up that's easy to use, you know? I don't know. It could be, could put a dent in Ethereum's utility in some ways, arguably.
I'm not going to lie. If there's a marketplace that tells me we can sell art on Bitcoin in an easy transaction where it becomes like a manifold, or it is manifold just on the Bitcoin backend or the blockchain, it's like, I'll take the Bitcoin. We don't discriminate against currency.
Yeah. Along with that, it's interesting because, of course, you have the whole kind of anti-censorship premise of Bitcoin, yet you do have people saying, no, we shouldn't be doing this on Bitcoin. It's like, but isn't that the whole point, that you can do what you want?
Yeah. I mean, it's all, look, to be quite honest, and I think heavily just to reinforce, I think that's why I stay in my super creative lane so heavily. Mm. Like trying to, we can be very creative and we will continue being so with drops on the blockchain and digital art and assets and things that are inoperable with real world kind of transactions, right? Like claims with physical pieces. And we have a lot of that kind of stuff we want to work on and having user interface with the digital art, but it's backed by physical or whatever that looks like, right? We have these things, but yeah.
Well, you know, back to being super creative, you know, maybe we can wrap up with, you know, what are you like, are you working on some installations right now? Are you working on some upcoming events right now? Like what's on your radar over the next little bit?
A lot, actually. So I've been working heavily with our schedule for this year. We now have multiple events over this year, NFT LA or the Outer Limits Edges, Outer Edges, I believe is what it's been renamed. We have the opportunity to go do an artist lounge there and an installation, which I'm really keen to do. We'll also be involved with the after party at a high-profile NBA Stars event where we will have live art installed and exhibited. East Denver, we are doing a punk brunch at the Choice Market. That's going to be another daytime event with some art and all the toys with Web3 interfaces that we bring to it. We're doing an event with Tower Records and Gala Music, I believe, with Emily and her band September morning in New York for New York NFT. I think I'm exhibiting all the artists, at least 30 people's art there at the actual NFT New York event. We'll see the outcome. But a big thing, aside from moving with where the, you know, the events and the conferences where the people go and that kind of circuit, definitely Miami Art Basel will be a big one for us. I want to do some serious art installations and disruptive creative stuff there. South by Southwest, that's a thing. But then the big thing I'm excited about, like really getting the agency up and running and getting enough staff to kind of like partners to make it move, and we're heading there. But we're doing a worldwide kind of circuit starting this year where we'll have a lot of international events where we will have presence, and all of our represented brands and artists will have space there. And we're also going to do art residencies. So it's all kind of opening up where we'll have like 20 people go to a certain country like Ibiza or Greece and go do an artist creative retreat for 5 days. And before, after that week, they tap into the local event that's also being hosted by one of our production and music partners. So our network's gone really deep at this point with entertainment and getting on mainstream, or not so mainstream, but main circuits of entertainment across the globe. You know, music festivals, art installations, clubs, restaurants, hotels, just really going for it on the enterprise level. So yeah,
sounds like a blast.
Has to be. I mean, fun's the name of the game. We are to create really cool things, and I will only do it with people that understand the level of where I want to take it. Yeah, but I think there's just so much opportunity. A lot of the artists that are doing really spectacular stuff deserve a much bigger audience, I feel. And I think it's very important for us to keep building what and who they are so that once that happens, you know, people see the depth of who and what they are. Because people look to that very quickly. And if you don't have a track record of being yourself at that point, then people question it very quickly. So, yeah, it's just bigger opportunities. We need to go bigger or not go at all.
Well, Keith, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me. It was nice to finally catch up with you. And yeah, I wish you all the best in 2023.
I really appreciate you. And thank you so much for, I can't believe how many episodes, you said 200 by now?
200 and, I think it's 270 or something like that. I've lost
it. That is ridiculous. It's just, you're one of those people. It's like you said, asked me earlier about talent, and it's like you, it's people that keep showing up, and it's not always the painter behind the brush or the DJ, but it's like people like you that create this content. It's worth everything, and I appreciate that. So thank you so much for having me.
I really appreciate that. Have an awesome day. Thank you.
You too. Thanks, buddy.
Right on.
Chat soon.
Take care. Hey, if you enjoyed this episode of NFP with D. Klein, please like and subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. Thanks again for listening to the Non-Fungible Podcast. See you again soon.